Who comes out a winner when we play the game of love on a dating app? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. It's been about a decade since a new generation of mobile apps brought online dating out of the shadows and onto our phones, and turned swiping, right or left, into a kind of romantic roulette. It's become the most popular way for couples to connect, but it's also a multi-billion dollar industry that relies on keeping users hooked. Sangeeta Singh Kurtz is co-host of the podcast Land of the Giants Dating Games. She explained how dating apps have been gamified.
In terms of dating apps, it just means designing it so it's fun. So they'll sort of integrate game-like features into the platform. So when you swipe and match with someone, it'll like bing, 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 like give you a little digital bit of approval. Fun colors, points, coins, things like that. So it's really just like any other online game, but they've integrated that into a digital matchmaking system.
All right, I want to play a clip from the first episode of your podcast. It's from Allison Davis, who's been a longtime user of dating apps. And this is her talking about the act of swiping.
Swiping and matching and swiping and matching was like constant little pings and great little distractions. And then when you get a message back, it's like pulling that lever in a Vegas slot machine. Like you just feel like the king of the world, you know? And sorry, that was really dorky.
I mean, that sort of seems like the comparison to a slot machine. That is not accidental, I'm imagining.
It is not. But, you know, we'd heard it from so many daters. So one of our most interesting interviews, in my opinion, was with an anthropologist who actually studied Vegas gambling addicts. And she likened the endless swipe format of dating apps to slot machines. So swipers, like slot machine users, they get suspended in what she called the zone of possibility, where you think you're going to get closure. You know, you think you're going to get your money. You think you're going to get your romantic partner. But the way it actually works is that it does not have a resolution. And if you think about the economic proposition of these companies, they don't really want it to have a resolution. You know, they'll lose their user base.
And how has this sort of gamification of the process of dating affected the users that you talk to? Like, is it changing how people think? Is it changing how people act in real life?
We talked to hundreds of users who started on these 10 years ago. And many of them said that in using technology to meet people, they sort of lost something tactile. Like they sort of forgot how to court people IRL. Allison told me a story in our first episode that she was at a bar recently and like she couldn't tell if the guy sort of like nudging up against her was flirting with her or was just like really friendly or sort of rude. She could not tell. Then I heard it from like 20 people that they were sort of losing their sense for how to communicate romantically in person because they'd been relying on these apps for so long. The other thing is the sort of paradox of choice, like the too many people, too many conversations. It also encourages people to sort of look for the ideal, like grass is always greener kind of thing. And then you get other interesting symptoms like, you know, people are dating outside of networks and communities. So there's no accountability for bad behavior, ghosting, catfishing, things of that nature. And all the time, daters are being told, you know, this is a numbers game. The more of these dates you go on, the better. And it's no wonder then that ultimately all of this is leading to burnout and exhaustion, which all starts with having too many options.
And I mean, yeah, using them for a decade, I think that kind of begs the question of, how do the app companies measure success? And does that differ from how users might measure success?
There is a gulf, at least that we've found in our reporting, between, you know, a company's objectives and users' objectives. So, you know, Tinder, Hinge, all of these apps, they seem, because they're businesses, motivated to get as many users as possible onto their apps for as long as possible and convince them to pay as much money as possible to use their services. And we know that these apps, their business model is based on subscriptions and in-app features, you know, things that promise users a leg up in the dating game, and they make them a ton of money. Like Tinder, for example, in 2021, it earned $1.7 billion off of this business model. So Match would say, you know, their business goals are in line with users' romantic goals. They'd say that, you know, like you're paying for a more effective, accelerated experience. Like you're paying for a stronger guarantee that you're going to meet someone. And it's hard to say if it actually works, but of the people we spoke to, you know, many of whom have been using these apps since they were free, were skeptical that paying got them any closer to reaching their romantic goals, which by and large is finding a long-term partner. You know, they use their roses or their super likes, but often to no avail. Many of them feel like they're throwing money into the void. And there's this one user story that was sort of haunting for me. Hinge gives out a free rose. On Hinge, there's a feature where you get a rose, and if you send it to someone, it enables you to sort of get to the top of their list of matches. So on Tinder, there's called a super like, and it's the same thing. So she used hers diligently for a year, and she got hit back twice. Like two people responded to her, and she went on one date, and it was terrible. So it's like they're using these paid features, but you know, to very little effect.
How much of this, though, do you think we can really sort of peg on technology? Is it just sort of a different set of problems from the set of problems that people had dating, you know, throughout history?
That's a good question. I mean, dating, I guess, has been famously hard. Tolstoy wrote about how hard dating was. So it's difficult to say how much of it is on the tech and how much of it is on the users, but like, I think a lot of people don't find a lot of success on these apps and blame themselves, but we wanted to give them context of the marketplace and the history of these apps and how they're designed to make it clear to them that, like, their lack of success is not their fault, and in some cases, it's by design.
So where do you see this whole trend going? Are apps getting even more sophisticated with this gamification?
Definitely. So we know that Match Group is doubling down on gamification because the new CEO that they just installed prior to coming to Match was the 10-year CEO of Zynga, the gaming company. So the Farmville guy is now in charge of your love life. And the way the market is going seems to be further digitization. So that's like metaverse dating. I spoke to one founder who is launching an app where you train your AI character to go on dates for you. Whoa. And if that goes well, then maybe you'll meet in person one day. So I think it's becoming increasingly digitized.
Sangeeta Singh Kurtz, co-host of Land of the Giants Dating Games. We reached out to Match Group, the parent company of Tinder and lots of other dating apps, to respond to the frustration users expressed in the podcast. The company cited the many success stories from happy users found everywhere from academic studies to the New York Times wedding section. And now for some related links. Of course, Sangeeta and her co-host go into much more depth on this and other topics in the full season of their podcast, Land of the Giants Dating Games. We'll have a link at our website, marketplacetech.org, where you can also find the full statement in response from Match Group. Of course, we can't talk about the positives and negatives of online dating without mentioning scams. Last year on the show, we discussed how romance scams like catfishing, where someone pretends to be a different person with fake photos or personal information online, these have been growing since the start of the pandemic. A recent analysis from the digital security website All About Cookies found that the number of catfishing incidents reported to the Federal Trade Commission skyrocketed between 2019 and 2022, leading to financial losses totaling about $500 million last year. It also turns out that the most catfished state on a per capita basis is Alaska. And the least catfished state? Louisiana, which is sort of a catfish joke that writes itself. Daniel Shin produced this episode. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.